Liz Glazer on the podcast. Ha. What's up?
How are you?
Good to see you. I'm so great. Good. Liz and I met about, what was it now? It was probably like a week and a half ago, yeah. 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And you seem like a happy-go-lucky person, so figured we have you on the moments. Pod.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, so we were supposed to have the pod a couple of hours ago, but I didn't know that you have a child.
Yes, I figured it was the right time to tell you. Before our first date.
Yes, I appreciate it. And also,
I guess second date.
You know, second date. Well, this is maybe like a more formal date.
Correct. We're
sitting down across from each other.
Yes. Ted, I have a kid.
How old?
8 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she is constantly sick. That's the thing. Is she's in daycare. And so because of that, they get sick. They all the time. So she tested negative for like COVID, flu, RSV, you know, all whatever. But she just has daycare, basically.
Is that, do you think, from the other kids?
Yeah. It's just like they're new to the world.
Yeah.
The germs are there because they're all there. They're all getting them and giving them to each other. And so any parent who's like gone through this, it's like, either you have all of the sickness now, like the normal sickness, you know, God forbid, whatever. But like you have it if they go to daycare, or you delay it and then it happens in like pre-K or whatever it is.
Have you tried any maybe nuanced methods that would protect your child from getting sort of sick? Like, I don't know. I've seen in places like Norway or Eastern European nations, they'll put their kid outside for like 4 hours during the middle of the night to sleep, so they get used to the cold and weird things like that.
Okay. No.
So I guess you haven't. All right. Okay.
We have not done that.
What kind of research does one have to do to make their kid have a more healthy lifestyle? What is it, just kind of like day to day or what?
I mean, yeah, like I think it's like my philosophy, I guess. Like, I don't know that I really have one, you know, like to answer your question. I mean, it's a little bit learning on the job.
Yeah.
There's a lot on TikTok. There's a lot of like, you know, every time period has like the in books. You know, so like Emily Oster is like a popular author of data-based children's raising children, you know, type of books. But I mean, for me, I'm just like, if I'm anxious about something, I Google it. I read whatever I see on Google. I don't know.
But aren't there too many different opinions you feel when you do that?
I guess.
Or you kind of see the people saying the same things.
Yeah, like I think I can, I'm sure I'm biased in the ways that we are. But also I'm like, okay, is something really wrong or is it normal?
Right.
I think like the most time, you know, most of the time that's what's going in my head.
Okay.
Is like, God forbid, is this something insane or is this just, she's 8 months old, she has a cold.
A little bit. Is there a certain diet that you specifically follow for your child? Sorry, I'm just fascinated about the
totally. Yeah. I mean, we do, she doesn't have artificial sugar, you know, like that's, I don't know. I'm in a state where I don't believe in artificial sugar, but I eat it. And like, I feel about myself, like, I'm like, if I were unbrainwashed from society.
Yeah. I was going to say,
I wouldn't eat it. And I know that because I haven't eaten it for like months at a time. Mm-hmm. And I felt better and whatever, whatever. And I guess obviously, like, I don't want to give my kid any kind of like disorder, right? But I'm just like, okay, if we're feeding her, we're going to do fruits, veg. I mean, she's had meat. I don't eat meat, but like, I don't know. My wife does. I'm just like, okay, fine, whatever. I mean, she's not eating like a lot of meat. She doesn't eat a lot of anything. She's tiny. But, you know, she has formula, and then that's like, she's at the phase where that's most of the calorie consumption.
Uh-huh.
Like that's where she's actually getting her nutrients. And then you have solid food as well, but solid food isn't for the purpose at her age of nutrition. Exactly.
I wonder if the kids growing up nowadays will completely phase out the processed sugar by the time they're like, I don't know, 30, 35 years old, just because I feel like the whole processed sugar industry really started to, get to their consumers like 50 or so years ago. And now mm-hmm. we're finally realizing that, yeah, you can't be eating whatever yeah. it is, Starburst, and then not on the processed sugar front, like sure. Cheez-Its in the same meal. Just like, right. it, besides the fact that it'll bring your mood completely down,
yeah.
it's also just stuff that's unhealthy and it's yeah. giving you disease. It's
yeah.
wild.
Yeah. Yeah. So I believe all of that. And also,
that water's all you, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Yes.
I don't know that I can reach it. But I'm fine.
Well, we can do no. a little bit of this, but okay. also I can give you a little water.
Now if you'd I like. Feel the other thing is I feel like my daughter when you did that, because like so much with Eloise, it's like you know, you bring the suit and then she goes for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, there you go. Well, there you go. You'll be my daughter for the hour.
Yeah, that's the date. So also that's on the table without a coaster. Is that a problem?
No, it's fine.
Okay, fine.
Don't worry about it.
Okay. Well,
the annoying thing about a glass table though is almost every single. Actually, you know what? I will say every day I gotta wipe it down. Really? And if it was a wood table, yeah. it probably wouldn't get wiped down every day. I tell you that.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I imagine you probably have glass in your house. You know what the deal is.
Yeah, I guess I have some.
But you have to put the glass protectors like on the corners for the sure. baby.
Well, not yet because not she's yet. Not okay, crawling.
Okay.
Yeah. So we had a baby-proof like person come and do a consult. Because, you know, everything is a business. And so, yeah, so he like looked around and was like, here's what you have to do. And so whatever, he'll come back.
And he's like, you need to protect this part, this edge.
Yeah.
Were there some things that he said that you were like, all right, well, I would have never thought of that.
Yes. Like I have a cat and I've had a cat for 16 years.
Oh, wow.
And so.
The same cat?
Yeah. He eats paper. And so like, I know because it's been 16 years and in cats, like don't, you know, he's in that phase for his whole life as opposed to a baby. But I know how to like make my house Jack friendly. That's my cat is Jack. Right. And like my Jack wife who lives with Jack is Jack's other mom doesn't have the same instinct because she hasn't had Jack for his whole life. So with that, like I know how to do that now, but with Eloise and for babies, I'm just like, okay, this guy is, you know, he has that mindset where it's like, he's looking around and I mean, you know, everything here, it's like you would have to get rid of all the stuff that like she could access. Or
what
a baby.
Do you think? Like what?
Well, there's books that, I mean, literally.
Books, really?
Yeah, because.
Like you can cut like a paper cut on the eye or something,
because baby,
right?
It's just baby grips are really strong. So my daughter, she can't crawl, but when she crawls, she could take one of those books and like throw it across the room for sure. You know, so it's that kind of mindset where you just have to like look at everything basically as a weapon.
Are Jack and Eloise getting along?
Great question. So when she was a baby, not that she's not, but like when she was super, super little.
And you said, sorry, she's 8 months?
Yeah, 8 months. Okay. So like when she was like a month or whatever, he thought she was a cat. And I say that because he would lick her hair like cats lick other cats. And it was so cute. I have videos. But now, like she's old enough to express enthusiasm in the form of lunging towards him. And she doesn't move on her own exactly. So she's like, you know, on our laps lunging, but he doesn't like it. And so he'll just like look away. So it'll be an adventure to see what mm-hmm. kind of relationship. In general, when we have toddlers over, like other people's kids and stuff like that, he's not a fan. And so, you know, I think it'll be kind of interesting just to see. I really hope they get along.
Traditionally, do yeah. baby, like toddlers and kittens get along or cats?
I
maybe?
Think it works different ways. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, yeah, it really does depend. Yeah. But I'm hopeful.
How has your schedule changed over the past 8 months? Because, I mean, being a stand-up comic, you're yeah. obviously out almost every single night.
Yeah.
Has that been, I mean, naturally, it's yeah. obviously been more difficult, but sure. is there something that you wouldn't have expected that is happening on
well,
a consistent basis?
I mean, it's a good thing. It's not like a detriment because of the schedule, but when you have a new baby, they generally have to get fed in the middle of the night. And so because I have the schedule of a stand-up comedian, I come home, you know, between 10 and 2 in the morning and I get to feed her at night And that's really nice.
She's eating at that time?
Yeah, because their stomachs are smaller.
And is that her telling you that she needs to be fed, or is that you kind of so doing it?
There's like this sleep expert who's like, I mean, other people say it too, but like we watch this video class and whatever. And she says like you can dream feed. That's what you call it. And when they're really little, they can actually sleep through the entire feed, which is wacky. But now she wakes up. She kind of always woke up a little bit. But anyway, you feed them in the middle of the night, and that basically carries them, you know, the extra hours so that they're not waking you up at like 4.
Right.
And so they sleep until like 7 or 8 or whatever.
And how many hours?
Well, so she can go for probably a stretch of like 6 hours. But before the dream feed, it's usually, let's say she's in bed at 7. I get home at midnight, 5. I do the dream feed, and then she sleeps until like 8. And so then, you know, it was so 7, 8, whatever. Yeah.
Do you have any other help outside of your partner taking care or no?
I mean, we have...
Oh, I guess you have daycare.
As daycare. Okay. Yeah, daycare is the main one. And then we do have like consistent babysitters. You know, it's not... I mean, we want to spend time with our daughter, and also both of us have jobs. And so it just is, you know, a reality where we went with daycare, even though like my job is mostly at night, but the reality of like what we do is like, yes, it's at night, but there is stuff in the day. You know, I think it's, and it was just more cost effective to opt for daycare where it's like, we know Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, we have somewhere to put her, rather than, oh my God, I don't work only at night.
Yeah.
Now I need to find someone at 3 in the afternoon because the gig is 3 hours away or whatever it is, you know?
Having all this information at your fingertips, being able to Google or maybe call somebody that's a, you know, a professional in the art of raising a child. Yeah. Do you think that it's way more helpful for you, slightly stressful? Uh-huh. Or do you think that maybe 100 years ago raising a kid, it's kind of like, all right, well, this kid's either going to survive, thrive, or, but whatever, I just have to pay attention to it.
I think probably it's better. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to answer the question because like it's a counterfactual. It like. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like, I generally, my wife is amazing as a person and as a parent.
You
and
hear so, that?
Yeah. Well, it's true. And, I don't say it to like win points in any way. I really just mean there's a lot that, like I wasn't driving the boat towards parenthood. My wife was. And so a lot of times with stuff, like I just don't know, you know, and I can research and then I'm like, okay, I guess the optimal temperature of a baby's room is 68 to 72 degrees. And so we have the monitor and I will always check, you know, if it's a 1 degree off, I'll figure it out. Like, you know, whatever. So I know the stuff that I know and I know how to research, but like, I feel like a lot of the instinct stuff and just the stuff that somebody who really wanted to be a mom for many years knows, I don't know as much. And so I rely on my wife a lot for that. And then, you know, in terms of the childcare, like thankfully we have my mom, we have my in-laws, and also babysitters and daycare and each other.
And you've been with your partner for how long?
6, 7 years.
And when did the topic of having a baby come
right away? Because we met the day after she froze her eggs.
Coincidentally?
Yeah. No. Like she was talking to a friend of ours. I didn't know her yet. We have a mutual friend who I knew from high school. And she was like texting with that friend. And the friend was like, what do you want to do after freezing your eggs? And my wife is divorced and she had been divorced a year, scheduled the egg freezing for like after the year-ish of being divorced.
Let's go to a comedy show. Don't you say?
No, she said, I want to start dating.
Okay.
And so then this friend was like, oh, I think I know someone. And then that's how we met. So yeah, so it wasn't like on the first date, not like our first date where I'm like, I have a kid, you know, it wasn't that, that kind of like, I need to break this to you. But yeah, I don't remember exactly, but like I knew pretty right away that that was what she had just done. And so it was never like a mystery that she wanted kids. But as a side note, like I don't think I ever dated anyone who didn't want kids. And also, I wouldn't have said that I don't want kids, even though I was a woman in my late 30s doing absolutely nothing in furtherance of having kids. And when somebody was like, do you want kids? I'm like, I don't know. And like, it's like, if you're 38 and female and not thinking like, do I freeze my eggs? You don't really want kids. Like, that's the reality.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, I'm a lesbian, so I can outsource it, I guess, is like arguably true. But I dated women for the most part who like really wanted kids. And definitely my wife really wanted kids because she had frozen her eggs.
Earlier on in your life, yeah. Did you ever date a man who wanted kids with you specifically?
Yes. I dated a guy in college. And
where'd you go to college?
Penn.
Plug. Ooh, all right. Yeah. She's smart and funny. Look at that.
But yeah, so, I mean, I guess we talked about it. It's a little, you know, I'm 44, and so this is like really a while ago, you know, but yeah, I mean, he definitely wanted kids and he definitely wanted to get married.
To you specifically?
At the time. Just like it, okay. Yeah, I mean, we dated for almost all of college. And so it was kind of like in college, that was my identity, like at least in large part was like,
yeah. You know what? That's crazy to think like if college kids were talking about having kids and getting married now, you'd be like, oh, you're way too young.
Yeah.
But then like, you know, years ago, it was just, that was the normal timing for things.
Yeah. And he was like much more old fashioned. And yeah, like there was something charming about that, I guess, like, but I don't know, like, you know, whatever. I mean, it was such a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know, you know, if looking back on it, like he would say, oh, I don't know if I wanted kids with you, but like we were kind of going in that direction until we weren't and we broke up and whatever.
Where'd you grow up?
Jers.
And you went to, where'd you go to, like Columbia High School in South Orange?
No. So I went to Jewish day school.
Okay.
Yeah. So I went to Mariah, which is a Jewish day school in Englewood, New Jersey. And then I went to Ramaz on the Upper East Side.
Yes, we talked about that.
And so, yeah. So that's, so I.
Where'd you have your bat mitzvah?
Tamcrest Country Club in Alpine, New Jersey.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah. So it's pretty fancy. I don't think it
exists. Oh, really? Well, it was kind of. I mean, it wasn't like black tie. You know, but like, yeah, it was like the place.
Do you still know your Torah portion?
I didn't have one because I went to Orthodox Jewish day school.
Wait, so that means
You don't read. Like my parsha was Chayei Sarah, and so I like plagiarized a speech from the one book we had at home because I was in a situation where like my school was more religious than my parents. My parents basically knew nothing about like reading Hebrew really. And so they were like, whatever, school will tell you how to do that. But for girls in an Orthodox day school, for the most part, they're not really paying attention to like what you're doing for your bat mitzvah. It's mostly a party.
Okay.
But you give a speech. And so this was before the internet. And so I was like, what am I going to do for the speech? And so I did the thing where it's like, you know, when you like, are you plagiarizing because you have a thesaurus right next to you?
Yeah, it was a lot easier a few years ago to do stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, that's what I did because I'm like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
And so on the video of my bat mitzvah, when it's the speech, I am like looking down in shame because I'm like, I know that this is a lie. Like maybe they know this part of the one book, you know, and that they definitely didn't home.
Afterwards. They're like, Liz, you were terrific up there.
No one said that. I mean, I really wasn't. And I mean, it was the video guy, like during my speech, he just like tested his Zoom function on his lens.
And that was like the most important line.
He's just like, nobody's going to want to watch this.
Wait, so why did your parents send you to an Orthodox day school?
Because so they're each descended from Holocaust survivors, 4 out of 4. So both my sets of grandparents. And they just wanted me and my brother to have, you know, a Jewish education that, quote, like, allowed us to know where we're from. You know, that's like how they would say it, which I feel like is such a like, I don't know, like it's like this, you know, it's like a euphemism, but it's even scarier. It's like whatever.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so we were gonna, I guess I was gonna go to the conservative, like the Solomon Schechter in Bergen County, except at the time, now it's great. I actually worked there for like a little bit and it's a great school. But like at the time, I guess they were renovating. And when I went on the tour with my parents, there was a leak and they were having class in the hallway. And my parents were like, we're not going to send you for all this money.
Yeah, well, there's a leak in
the right. Like you're gonna like be in the hall for class. So they went with the other, which was Orthodox. Now I think there's like more options of various denominations and whatever. But at the time, that was kind of the only game if you don't want the leaky school.
Where did both sets of grandparents spend their time outside of Eastern Europe when they came to the United States?
So, well, one side didn't come to the United States and were in Israel. The other side, because my dad's from Latvia, all of his family went to Israel, including him. But he was like, I don't like it. I'm going to New York. And so that's how he got here. He met my mom like pretty quickly after he arrived. And my mom's side, Poland, and then New York. So like Long Island.
Are any of your grandparents still alive?
No. But I'm 44. I mean, I guess like...
And maybe there aren't as many survivors now. Or yeah. If there are, they were just like probably 2 or 3 years old at the time. And now they're in their 90s.
Yeah. I don't know like 100... Right.
If you don't want to get too deep into this...
I don't care. Okay. No, I'm fine.
Talking to your grandparents about the Holocaust, was that ever a story or no?
So with my dad's parents, who were kind of more like open... There was a huge language barrier because they lived in Israel. I sort of knew Hebrew. I mean, I went to like Jewish day school, so arguably I knew Hebrew, but anybody who went to Jewish day school knows what I mean is like, you don't know Hebrew unless you're like already Israeli. And then like the two Israeli kids in the class are just like, look, Liran and Ron know how to speak Hebrew because they're Israeli. And everybody else is like, ani mevina, you know, whatever. It's like bad. But, I mean, I'm sure there are exceptions, but for the most part, I think I'm right. And, so my grandparents on my dad's side knew this blend of Hebrew and Russian that I actually did understand. Like if I go to Israel and like listen to them, like my aunt and my cousins, they speak this kind of Russian Hebrew blend, which for me is sort of natural because I knew Russian as, one of my first languages as a kid from my dad. And so then it was blended with Hebrew. And I think it has like that kind of second language function in your brain where it's like, if I don't know a word in Hebrew, rather, then I would substitute Russian and vice versa. And so whenever I would visit with my cousins in Israel, after like a week or so, I was like, oh, I know this. I can speak this like actually quite comfortably, that blend. But there was a real language barrier with like my grandpa and my grandma on that side because they didn't know any English, whereas my cousins knew some and know some English. My mom's side, the language wasn't the barrier. My grandma on my mom's side was a talker, but she died when I was 4. And my grandpa on my mom's side was not because of language, just because of like vibe. And so I don't really have the, like, I heard all these stories about...
Your parents never told you anything?
I have like some stories, like allegedly, and I don't mean that like I call it into question. I just like, I don't know firsthand really, but like my grandpa by trade on my mom's side was an electrician. Allegedly, like the Nazis were looking for him because he knew how to fix some radio tower. And so he was wanted, and my grandma on my mom's side looked not Jewish. So she would walk the streets of Poland to find hiding spaces for my extremely Jewish looking electrician and wanted grandfather. And so that's how they survived, was because she didn't look Jewish. So that's what I know from my mom's side. And then the war was over and they went on, you know, a boat and were in a displaced persons camp in Rome, Italy, which was where my mom was born. And then from there, they went to New York. And then on my dad's side, I know far less. Like, I feel like on my dad's side, they did have numbers tattooed on them. Although my grandfather might have 2 from like a work camp. So, but the details are fuzzy because I just like, I don't know really. Like everything I've just told you is like the clearest detail, you know, that I've ever known.
It's just such a wild thing to happen in your family,
yeah,
and then not know much detail about it.
Well, I think it's like the reason for a lot of inherited trauma, because I'm like, I don't know if the end is near. You know, it's like at any moment. I mean, I think it's also like, I don't mean it in a dark and serious way. Like, it can feel that way, but I think it's also like a reason for humor, which is like a way out of anxiety. Like, you can't be anxious and laughing, you know? And I think that that's like in part why there's a lot of Jewish humor, because there's also a lot of Jewish anxiety. And I think that it's like a coping mechanism, one for the next.
Are you going to raise your daughter Jewish?
Yeah. I mean, we're both Jews. My wife's a rabbi. So okay. It's like, you know, right. It'd be kind of random if we were like, you're Buddhist.
is she at a conservative temple, Orthodox, or?
My wife is a rabbi at a Reform synagogue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
for those who don't know what we're talking about, can you kind of describe what Reform, the conservative, and then Orthodox is?
Since sure.
You said you went to an Orthodox
Reform
school.
Reform is nice. that's what I would say. No, I mean, I like Orthodox is like strict. I mean, there are many comedians who have like really good jokes about, you know, like Mati Litwack or Matisyahu Litwack is like, Orthodox Judaism is like the highest level of difficulty, like, or the difficulty setting or something like that, like a video game thing. It's really, I butchered it, but in a not kosher way. Mm-hmm. And, but it's a great joke.
Nice. That was a good one too, right there, yeah. That you just slipped in.
Just shechted it. So, and then conservative is like, I don't really know like what the tenets are, if any, of the conservative Jewish movement.
Well, let's say like if you're in temple specifically, like Orthodox Jews, like men and women are separated, correct?
Sure. Yeah.
And that's not the case in conservative and Reform.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I think there may be some conservative temples where that might be true. But just because like there's a lot of like with anything, you draw lines and then there's like hybrids and, you know, people want certain elements.
Like a hybrid weed or something.
Yeah,
you
know,
like
sure.
A little sativa.
Sure.
Little
yeah, yeah. Or like, you know.
Don't need to compare it to weed, but
right.
We're two Jews having fun here.
But I was thinking about it from like a sexual orientation perspective. It's like, oh, you're bi or pan or, you know, like a little bit of gay.
Interesting.
And, I don't know.
Now,
you know?
Would your wife be able to be a rabbi in a conservative or Orthodox?
Conservative, yes, as a technical temple. Matter. But it's also like, it depends which one, you know, because even though there's like a movement and there is sort of like the equivalent of a federal government for each of the Orthodox movement, conservative movement, and Reform movements, I think there also are like effectively states' rights in the sense that every temple is its own entity. And so is it possible that like a board at a conservative synagogue would be like, we don't want a gay rabbi? Sure. I think it's less likely than at an Orthodox synagogue. Like, I know gay female rabbis at conservative synagogues. And I know the synagogues that wanted to hire that same woman, you know? So it's like, it does happen. And then there also now are Orthodox women rabbis. There's an institute called the Maharat Institute, which is an amazing school that like trains Orthodox women rabbis. And so it's a thing now, you know, because like gender equality is something that's interesting to like lots of groups of people, no matter the denomination. Like, certainly there is and are sects of Orthodoxy that are like not wanting to assimilate, definitely don't want women to be, you know, leaders of any kind. Okay. But like, you know.
How did your parents feel about that?
About female rabbis? I mean,
when you introduce your partner to your parents.
Oh, that by that point they were like, well, because I mean, when I first came out, they were like not okay with it. Then okay. I started. Yeah.
And when was that? Just to
get back to when that. I came out to them when I was 21, and so yeah, and they definitely didn't like it. Like, they knew that I had dated my college boyfriend, so they were confused, and you know, and also like, I knew I was gay. Like, I told my college boyfriend when we started dating that I was like, I think I'm gay. And then he was like, whatever. Kind of. Yeah. I mean, we were children, you know, essentially, but like, yeah, it was college. I was young, you know? And
did you think that this was maybe a phase, or you kind of knew that this is the way it was going to be?
I knew that I was gay. I didn't know that I could have a life in which my real desires would be able to be realized. Yeah. And so it's not that my relationship with my college boyfriend was like fake or anything, but like, I don't know. It's like, I just didn't think that that was possible. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I have crushes on like all of these women. Like I had a crush on a girl in high school and we kind of dated for a little. And like the first time we ever hooked up, we go to a diner on the east side in the middle of the night. And this was like in college, sort of after I broke up with my ex-boyfriend. And so we hook up and we're at the diner and she's single, this girl, right? Not dating anybody. And she says to me, she's like, my husband will never know about this. And so my shame of like, even in situations where I was getting what I wanted, the idea of like, no, no, this isn't real. Like, this is never going to be like life. You're not going to be able to have like a happy situation, you know, was my normal.
How old is she, by the way?
With the husband? I mean, that, I guess we were like 21 at that time.
And she was Orthodox? Or?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, and I wonder if he does know about it, you know, because it's like,
still to this day?
Yeah.
Like 20 years ago?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, but, you know, it's like, I guess like for me, the interesting element of it now that I find myself in a thankfully very happy and, I mean, beyond my wildest dreams type of situation, you know, where it's like, oh my God, I live with my wife who's amazing and my daughter and my cat. And like, it's just, you know, it feels like the hard part is like, and you expect me to feel like I deserve this?
Yeah. How do you deal with that? No, I mean, from people, people who feel so guilty and then, and then the best things happen to them. I don't know.
I feel like I deal with it by writing observations like that, where it's like, oh, that is how I really feel, you know? And, I mean, for me, like I am sober and I say that because in my route to sobriety, my therapist, I've had the same therapist for 17 years, which I told my brother that he's like, that is the disease.
You think it's a bad thing?
He did. Yeah. I mean, he was kidding, but like, I think it's so funny. Cause like everybody's like, you know, if you screw up your kid, they'll have to go to therapy. I'm like, I love therapy. Like, I don't want to deprive my daughter of going to therapy. Like, therapy is a party and the theme is you. It's the best, you know? So anyway, but, when I was getting sober, cause my therapist knew me when I wasn't sober and she's like, you know, like, I don't forget exactly what made her say this, but basically like, you're allowed to have good things like that. That isn't a reason to be anxious. It's not a reason that you have to like use a substance in order to deal with, you know, the bigness of how good something can feel or whatever. I don't know. Yeah.
Why'd you get sober?
I'm a journaler. And so what would happen to me is I would smoke weed. For me, weed was like the thing. And I don't have like anything against any drug. I don't care what anyone else does. But like, I know for me that I would smoke weed or whatever, ingest weed. And then the next morning I would be writing about how much I regretted having ingested weed the night before. And I was like, at some point I was like, at the very least, if I don't do this thing, I can write about something else. Because if I'm committed to writing my honest feelings, and these apparently are they, then if I take out the ingredient that's causing me to write that, then maybe I'll get to some deeper level of like knowing myself.
What was the regret though?
I don't know, but it was there because I was just writing about it.
But was there something like when after you smoked and that particular night, like what was the difference in feeling between smoking that night and then waking up the next morning and not being high?
I don't know that it's anything other than the knowledge that I was. That's it. You know, like, and I guess like, I mean, I understand the question. Like, it's like there wasn't any kind of, and maybe I'm sure that there are, you know, it depends on the night or whatever, but like, I don't really have like, ugh, and then I did this thing that I regretted or anything like that. Like, did I have any situations like that? Maybe. I'm like now reminded of like a time that I took a phone call from an ex and like was on the phone for 5 hours. Would I have done that if I wasn't high? I don't know. You know, so maybe it was like that. But I think overall it was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. And then I'm doing it. And the answer to the why of that, I don't know that there's a more particular one other than I just didn't want to, I just felt like I don't want to depend on this. I don't want to feel like I'm being controlled by this, that kind of thing. Even in the absence of like a consequence that was specifically bad. You know,
and were you never really a drinker, or was it kind of like the same time? Yeah, in October, or?
Yeah, it was around the same time. I definitely had like nights that I was drunk in my whole life, but I wouldn't say that was my primary thing. But I stopped drinking as well. Yeah, and it was a similar reason.
Yeah, sometimes I feel that way with like my phone.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm looking at an app or something. I'm like, right. why am I doing this? I want to stop. Too.
Yeah.
Which is totally. So weird, you know, cause like nowadays being in our industry, it's something that you really have to focus on.
I know.
One of the many things you have to focus on. So it's like,
right.
Is this part of my job and I'm supposed to not like doing it?
Yeah.
Or is this something that really is like hitting me deep and it's just making me uncomfortable?
Well, I think with phone stuff and also, you know, with food, those are addictions or whatever one wants to call them. I don't really have like strong feelings one way or the other. I don't mean it in a stigmatizing or pathologizing way. I just mean like the thing. But it's like, you can, like you have to eat and you have to look at your phone in order to do positive things. And so then the question is like, what's the way to do it, but then also not be bound by it.
Consumed by it.
That's a good way of putting it.
What do you think about these new VR headsets that Apple just came out with?
Oh yeah. What do they do?
it's just, from what I've seen on TikTok and just from clips is like, you can have as many different screens up in your face as you want, yet you can still see through and like see the real world behind it. So it's basically just very lightly tinted, with your messages, texts up here, with TV up here, with maybe like your step count here. So it's basically giving you all this information without you having to go and look for it. It's already up on your screen. It's just, it's terrifying yet fascinating, but it's like, are we going to start to see, people or kids like Eloise in 20 years on the way to high school, you know, reading something, texting someone and watching something on the same time when she's like on the school bus? Is everybody going to have these headsets? It's just like, what's going to even happen?
Yeah. I mean, And I guess like, I don't know. I don't mean to be too Pollyanna about stuff, but I do have, I think, a little bit of that tendency. And so, you know, I think that there can be a lot of good. Like, that sounds cool, what you've just described. And also, I can see that it would be a nightmare. But it also sounds cool. So my hope for Eloise is, like, to the extent that she finds it legitimately cool, great.
Yeah.
You know, or productive or whatever.
And I also think kids growing up these days will have a better handle of how to manage and control their usage of it.
Yeah.
You know, like we were just like introduced to TikTok getting huge like 5 years ago.
I know.
And then Instagram like really started to pick up around like right before with Reels and stand up like in 2020. So we're like less than 10 years into this whole new technology wave.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to see like even when you're out out at a restaurant or something and you see kids with their headphones and like a big iPad in front of them. Would that be, is that something that you would allow Eloise to do? Or are you just like, you don't know
what
the environment will be like in a few years?
Yeah. I just, you know, I hesitate always to like, I don't know, apply theoretical parenting, like this is my line or whatever. Cause I just don't know.
And it's always changing, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And also it's like, she's a baby. So, you know, now, I mean, she doesn't have stuff like that. Like what I do with her is, so I'm training her specifically to be a stand-up comedian is that she loves to watch footage of herself because I'll show her a video of her. And it's so interesting to watch her observe herself. And I'm like, that's fun.
What does she do?
She just like laughs and stuff. And that's like, you know, I don't know. I wonder, I'm like, that doesn't feel bad.
Is she trying to speak to you?
She says, hi, maybe.
Hi and maybe or no. Hi, kind of. You don't know.
Arguably it's high. Right, right, right. Yeah, because she's like,
but she's but she's so
yeah.
And I wonder if kids are going to start to speak super young. First of all, dogs and cats are due to be speaking by now. I feel like they've been around humans long enough.
Well, but Jack does.
Yeah, Jack talks. Yeah, Jack's like, I need more cat, need some more tuna fish or whatever cats eat. But are kids going to start to speak younger? Kids going to start to be able to? I don't know about walking because maybe there's not like something that will directly help children walk.
Yeah, I don't know. But
the speaking aspect, watching and learning, and
I don't know enough about development to know whether that alone would spur it earlier. Like I know from daycare that people say that that can help because you're around other kids and you're, you know, like the teachers talk to them and whatever. But I think for the most part, stuff happens like when it's going to happen.
Is it pretty standard to have your child in daycare as young as Eloise's or
it,
no?
It really depends. Okay. Like there's like 1 million different ways to do anything. And so there's people who stay home. There's people who have nannies. There's people who, you know, do different kinds of daycare. I mean, she's in a daycare situation where it's like very few kids. And then there's like a good, you know, teacher ratio and stuff like that, where it feels like a community. We know all the babies. We know all the parents. There's like a text thread of all the parents. You know, it's like, I don't know. It feels good. I mean, she's watching less stand-up comedy than she would be if she was home with me.
Or out with you.
Right. Then, that's true. Yeah.
What's the best part about having a child?
It's amazing. Like it's like drugs. You know, like in the sense that there are times when I'm holding Eloise and like her little face is like right next to my face. And I'm like, this is euphoria, ecstasy. This is like all of the good feelings I could ever imagine. And time stops and she's right there. And it's the best thing. It's the best thing. And like, yeah, I don't. I mean, there's something incredibly pure in the sense that she is a person, but she's so pre-verbal, but she's not pre-feelings. Like her feelings are enormous. And watching her be able to do different things subtly differently, like now she's starting to reach and hug. And the observation and the feeling of her wanting to do that to me is the best I've ever felt. Because it's like, she's the best person. Like without a doubt in my mind and heart right now. And she has that reaction to me. Like Eloise, come on, you know? But like, that is amazing. Yeah.
And if there are any difficulties that you can...
There's a lot.
Think about, yeah.
It's, I mean, you know, especially like this week, she's been sick. And so she's a very happy baby overall. And when I say that, I don't mean it to, you know, I hate the idea that like I would be saying something. It's like, well, she's very advanced. Or here's what I mean when I say that. I mean, like you walk into her room, she's like flapping and so excited to see you and wake up and that kind of thing. And when she's sick, it's like the delta between how happy she can be is exactly how it is on the other side of the spectrum. She's so upset and it's so hard. And you see her want to be happy that she's awake. And then she's like, oh, right, I'm sick. And it's so upsetting because you know how happy she normally is. And then there's this state. And so that's really hard. And then also it's like, why is she crying? You know, because a lot, like, especially when a baby's not sick, they're crying because they're tired, they're hungry, they, you know, have a poopy diaper, whatever it is, but you can kind of fix it and then it goes away for the most part. But when she's sick, it's like, why is she crying? Because she's sick, and being sick is awful. But then it's, you know, like we do, you know, we try and be judicious about it, but like you can give infant Tylenol, you can do infant Motrin, and those, you know, are magic. So that helps, but that's hard. I mean, it's hard, you know, to have a sick baby.
Do you have any new material over the last 8 months?
Yeah.
Like a lot or more than you expected, or go ahead.
I don't know. I guess probably the amount that I expected, like just like every time there's a new phase, I'm like, you know, finding myself talking about it to my wife. And then at some point, you know, when this happens,
she'll give you a giggle and you're like, oh,
yeah, right. Yeah. Or like, okay, that's the rant, I guess, that is the beginning of the new joke about this, you know? So, I mean, it's also like, because she's in daycare, I think anything that involves other people is ripe for comedy. And so in the context of daycare, it's like daycare is the other babies, the other parents, and the teachers. And so there's a lot of funny in, like, you know, for example, like the way the teachers try to communicate like all that they're doing at daycare. And it's like, look at Lulu, who's holding her bottle and, like, you know, on her own. And like Violet is crawling.
Well, the teacher will send you pictures doing that.
They do it all day because it's like you have basically a private social media. They're like,
look,
feed.
It's worth it for you to put your 8-month-old in daycare.
Yeah, it's like Harry wrote an op-ed, you know, but but so, yeah, so there's like stuff like that. And really it just arises because my wife and I will be talking about our feelings or reactions to, like, can you believe, like, the, you know, because they also, the teachers, they're not shy and they're professionals. And so they're like, my wife, I think, takes it more personally than I do because we'll get like a note. And it's like we had this thing about the teachers wanted Eloise to be eating more solid foods than we were giving her. And there's debate about, like, when you introduce solid foods because it's a choking hazard. But then, you know, it's like these teachers know more than we do. And they're like, she's not going to choke from bananas that are cut, whatever. And they're also very into puffs, which dissolve. But like puffs are like, I don't know, just kind of processed. And so we're like, we don't want to do puffs. Okay, well, could you send some sort of natural, like, whatever alternative?
You sent her to school with lunch.
Oh yeah. Not just lunch, Ted. It's like, it's so intense. Like, we're making like bento boxes, and by we, I mean my wife. Uh-huh. And so it's intense, like what you have to send. And it's like, she needs a water cup, and it's like, why does she need water? You know? So it's a lot of like that frustration, and we'll get these messages. And so, especially with the solid foods, it was just like, you know, Eloise is fine. She can have solid food. And I'm just like, she can have a loaf of bread. Please send a whole loaf of bread with her tomorrow. And not literally, but it's kind of like that stuff. Where, you know, sometimes like the punchlines will arise from, they're not actually saying that, but what are they saying that sort of feels like that and is ridiculous?
Do you ever question what some of these teachers are saying? Like, well, do you have a kid? Do you have a child? Or are you just looking after other people's children?
No, I don't really, because
that could be a thought though, right? For especially if you're like, well, no, she doesn't need to eat hard things right now.
Right. It is definitely true that it's possible to have that thought. I generally take the position in life that I know almost nothing. And especially when somebody's job for decades has been to teach daycare. And also, like, one of the teachers, like, has a business doing food prep for moms. And I've like spoken to her about
with children.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 And so I do trust them is true. And so is it sometimes that I'm like, the reason you want all of them eating Puffs is because you have to do less work.
Or if like they're... she's sponsored by Puffs.
Imagine. Right.
It's like a doctor. Yeah. Kids should eat Puffs. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, some of it like does cash out to like, yeah, you want them all to be holding their bottles because then you don't have to have manpower to hold a bottle for a baby. But ultimately, it's like our goals are aligned. I want my kid to be able to hold her own bottle, like at some point. So the fact that it's more convenient for the teachers is also fine, even if that's like in part their motivation, right? And so I'm not terribly cynical about it, but it is funny sometimes when they're just like, you have to do this. Like, this is the right way. And it's like, is it? You know, so.
Do you get your information from, where's like a main source that you would get information from if you had a question, if you had a thought, if you're like,
all my friends have kids.
Okay.
Yeah. So my like friends from high school and college were the same people. We like went together from high school to college. So it's seven of us. I'm the last to have kids. And so if there's an issue, our group chat is active all day. And so, yeah. It's like, hey, and
you all have kids in the same age range.
No, theirs are all older.
Okay.
And so, I mean, it varies. There's seven of us. So like, you know, I'd have to go through like each example, but, it goes from like graduated college to Eloise. And then the next up is like maybe six, something like that.
You know, sometimes I think about that.
Yeah.
In terms of like having people in your friend group who are going through the same situation as you, like one of my roommates from college has two kids now, one who's like five and then the other who's, I don't know, 6 months old.
Right.
And I, for myself, I'm like, I can't see myself having a child within like the next 2 years or maybe 3 years. And I'm like, am I behind? Am I, did he rush it or whatever? And me being 32 years old.
Yeah.
20 years ago, if I was 32 years old without a girlfriend and a kid, people would be very concerned for me. So it's like, maybe now am I on the right timing of path? And you talking about having a kid, it sounds so dope. And like having someone who you can partner up with and like take care of this kid and be like, all right, well, what should we do? I don't know. Or maybe we'll read this. We'll just send it to that daycare.
Yeah.
No, it just sounds great.
Yeah.
Sounds
great. I think it is great. And also like, I don't know. I imagine that you have your version of this, because like we're doing stuff in our respective careers, you and I mean, that are kind of off of a path, and it's like you're forging your own way. And I feel like I've always had a little bit of that, like even from being in college and being like, what I never thought about being the first to get married until I broke up with my boyfriend in senior year. And then like one of my friends was like, yeah, I mean, you've been like the luckiest one of us because you had like a husband, basically, because like he was going to marry you. And I'm like, oh, interesting. That was never my goal. I wasn't like trying to get out of here married ASAP, you know, at all. And when I, you know, then started dating women and whatever, like, it's not to say that along the way, I never was like, when am I going to find someone? Because I was, I definitely had that thought. But I think for me, personally, and that's the example I go to, is like, I had it and then I'm like, I don't know that I want this. And professionally for me too, like I had a whole career. I got tenure before I ever did stand up, and then I loved it and left. And I feel like for me, that may be a pattern. And I don't think it's such a bad thing. It's just like, because it never really allowed me to wonder, am I behind? Because I was on this totally different path and I had the thing basically that I was supposed to want. And then I was like, oh, I don't want this.
Is it like the grass is greener?
Yeah. Kind of? But it's like you're on the grass and you're like, okay, great. Oof. It's green.
Oof. Yeah.
Right. And I can appreciate the greenness of the grass. And also I might want to step off the grass. And that's okay. You know?
Is there one thing that you're looking forward to most over the next few years or maybe in 15 years in your child's life?
Oh, in my child's life. I mean,
like the first day of preschool, high school graduation. If you've thought about it.
You know, I'm looking forward to, I wonder what her activities will be. Like she kicks a lot. She kicked a lot in the womb.
Soccer?
Right. And so that like I'm like, okay, we're going to have to give her options of kicking heavy activities because she's clearly
bring
exhibiting
over like
that.
A kickboxing coach.
Right. Like, and I guess like I'm looking forward to knowing what that instinct, which is so clear. Like she's, I mean, if she were here, you would be like, that kid kicks a lot. Like I can't even take a picture. Every picture that's like alive is like kicking. Like, you know, whatever. And so I'm looking forward to knowing what it's for.
Maybe swimming too.
Right.
Maybe.
She does swim. She does swimming.
Oh,
lessons.
Wow. Already?
Yeah. Well, wow. You can do swimming really young. It's like in like Florida, you have to because like there's so many pools and like water safety is a huge thing.
Well, what do you mean you have to at that young of an age?
Yeah.
Really?
Because it's like a huge risk and like, yeah, you know,
water everywhere, right?
Yeah, there's water everywhere. And so you just like have to teach them not to drown, teach them what to do, whatever. And so we happen to be going away next week. And so that's part of the reason that I was like, maybe we should just like start swimming because
where are you going?
We're going to Florida. And so, I mean, the thing is, it's probably like, we'll be like doing the same stuff that we do in New Jersey, uh-huh, probably. But like, it, you know, it was just like, okay, like it's not bad to have her in swimming.
Definitely not.
Yeah. I mean, she's swimming mostly is that she's like carried around a pool by this bearded guy, who I'm always like, that's her sperm donor, which it's not, but it like makes
Paolo
me laugh. Yeah, totally. But while she's sobbing in his arms, cause like now she doesn't as much, but like, it's pretty normal when you put a baby in a pool that they're just, they lose it. So we have some funny pictures of just her crying her eyes out in the pool with her sperm donor.
That's amazing. The life of Eloise.
Yeah.
I think we covered it pretty deeply. Liz, before we get at it, first of all, thank you so much
thank
for being
you,
an
Ted.
Open book
oh my God.
About your childhood, about life.
Oh,
it was
totally
amazing.
Yeah.
This makes me want to have a child. Ladies, if you're listening, maybe in a few years.
Yeah.
But before we get out of here, we're going to pop up your Instagram. Let us know what shows you've got coming up. This will be out 1 week from today. So today is February 15th. If you have anything exciting coming up, please
I mean, the thing, first of all, you can go to my website, Dear Liz Glazer. You can find, you know, tickets and whatever. I'm on tour in a major, major way because I'm prepping for a special taping in May.
Let's go. And where's the special taping?
It's at SOPAC, the South Orange Performing Arts Center.
Love it.
It's a big theater. And so we're half sold out.
Already?
Already. So you can get your tickets at the SOPAC website. I mean, if you follow me on Instagram, for example, at Liz Glazer, you'll hear a lot about the special.
How long has that theater been there, by the way?
I don't know.
That you're aware of? You think like at least 30 years?
I think it, but it was like redone or something.
Okay, because my dad went to Columbia High School and grew up in South Orange.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, my dad listens to the pod usually, so maybe he's familiar with that.
Totally. If that he wants theater. To come, let me know.
Absolutely. Love it. You hear that, Dad? Guys, thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Peace.
Bye.